Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:03 p.m. and that is standard time. Today is January 5th, and Amazon was down another $1.80 in here today, and still trending downwards. It's obviously a difficult time when a share is declining like this, and there's a couple of different issues that Amazon is facing. The first is slowing consumer demand. And that would be bad enough, except for the fact that they spent a ton of money in 2020 and 2021 building warehouses. And these warehouses are now an increasingly large financial burden. So they're shutting them down. And that's going to have a knock-on effect for a lot of those REITs that are offering exposure to warehouses. But then, of course, you have the additional issues that they fired a ton of people too, and they continue to let people go. Those weren't all warehouse workers. And they've had significant issues with their IT since they let a large number of IT people go. And I think there's no discussion of it, but I think it's very likely that some of those disgruntled workers left poison pills behind and messed up some of the infrastructure. But what I think is also important to highlight is that the growth in cloud computing is deteriorating, and the First Trust Cloud Computing ETF remains in a downtrend. There's a major issue for the middle part of the cloud computing sector, because on the one hand, you have the infrastructure, and companies like Amazon, Google, and Microsoft, they dominate the provision of data centers and the actual place where the cloud resides. Then you have the middle companies that provide the bits of architecture, whether that is software or hardware, that fit together so that somebody's data sits within the mainframe, it's isolated from other areas, then it can communicate across different parts of the business and allow for the front end part to work correctly. And of course, the front end means what users of the company's web infrastructure actually deal with on a daily basis. So there's a lot of little companies that provide niche services. And of course, they're not so little. They're multi-billion dollar companies, but they provide niche services. And they are behind the scenes in many respects. So then that creates something of a conundrum. Because what is to stop a company like Twilio, which is one of those types of companies, and we can see here that what they do is they develop internet infrastructure solutions. What's to stop them from building a front-end solution and compete with some of those front-end solutions? And then, of course, by the other way of thinking about it is what's to stop the front-end providers from providing the middleware solutions? So these are the companies that have fallen the most because a lot of them don't really have a defendable moat. So then you have other companies that are also within the cloud computing sector, but they offer more of a one-stop shop. And you've got companies like Oracle. Now, I'm not saying that Oracle is suddenly going to become the best performing company in the world, but it's clearly demonstrating relative strength compared to the wider cloud computing sector, which would suggest that investors are willing to favor reliable cash flows rather than the promise of cash flow, and that potentially these companies with a bit of gray in their beards have a better chance of providing the one-stop solution that customers might actually pay for. So SAP is also demonstrating relative strength and bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average. And Dell Technologies, well, they built a substantial proportion of their business on servicing the needs of data centers. And what they're trying to do is to offer a one-stop shop. But the share is still trending downwards. And it's steady and potentially a higher reaction low right now, but there's still going to be a slowdown in the bricks and mortar part of this business. So Dell is trying to offer a one-stop shop, and well, I think time will tell whether they're in fact able to do that. But the net effect is that the Nasdaq remains in a downtrend, and it was in negative territory again today, and still encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average, and it is trading below the 1,000-day moving average. And we just can't forget that there hasn't been a time since the lows in 2008 and 9 when the Nasdaq traded below the 1,000-day moving average. So this is more than a medium-term correction. This is potentially now a rather more significant event that we might be looking at not just a medium-term peak, but a peak that could last years. And there will be other sectors will lead on the upside. Just how big the impact of that's going to have on corporate profits and margins generally, I think, is less well understood by investors. But what we can clearly see here on this graphic is that the margin for the S&P was pretty much all technology over the course of the last decade. And a lot of it was technology, but then also healthcare in the period before the financial crisis and afterwards. So the two big contributors that have growth potential are healthcare and technology, and arguably they're one and the same thing. But then there's this additional chart that's also worth highlighting, and it's that corporate, the EBIT margin, EBITDA margin, is way above where it has historically trended. So there is ample scope for corporate profits to decline. And that would be very much in tandem with a recession. So that's basically, I think, where we're heading. And when we think about the yield curve spread, well, then it's still contracting. And it was down another 7 basis points in here today. So we're down to negative 74 basis points. And this is before a recession is, in fact, confirmed. And it's unlikely that a recession will be confirmed until unemployment starts to rise. I suspect that the Federal Reserve is going to be reluctant to cut interest rates. They might not wish to raise interest rates a great deal more because they would probably want to see the net effect of all the interest rate hikes they've already done. But bond yields are starting to come back down, and there was a pop in upwards in the yields today, and then it was reversed. Now, when we think about gold, well, gold prices have been quite steady for the last 2 days in tandem with yields compressing, and did not rebound as eagerly as the bond prices did in here today. But still holding the breakout. And potentially now going to unwind the very short-term overbought condition, but still on a recovery trajectory overall. And the silver price was also in negative territory and pausing around the $24 level. And as long as it's holding the move above the 200-day moving average, then I think we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But it is working on a downside key reversal. So how it performs tomorrow will be very telling, and it could potentially represent a pullback of a few dollars back down into the $21 area, and potentially even more than that if we were to see it extend the decline tomorrow. So this is a rather interesting point here because the dollar remains quite steady. And it was in positive territory again in here today. And I think one of the things that we have to be prepared for is that the Federal Reserve is willing to hold interest rates higher for longer. They're willing to endure more economic pain than anyone really anticipates, and that will put upward pressure on the dollar, which would put some downward pressure on commodity prices. And commodity prices are starting to experience some stress. So oil prices have been negative for 2 days and were basically unchanged in here today. And natural gas prices pulled back very violently at the beginning of the week and extended the decline in here today. So now back below the $4 and closing on that basis in here today. And obviously, then the bigger questions are going to be how low are energy prices going to go? How well are the prices responding to slowing growth? The economic contraction in Europe is gathering pace. The pound is back below 120, and that's amid the biggest strikes on the rail network in years, and the potential that the government is going to try and pass laws on minimum service. And that's going to be a difficult one. So they've invited unions back in to talk, and it's a very open question what the kind of concessions those unions will get from the government. But holding the entire country to ransom isn't something that's very fair. It would be quite different, I think, if every demographic had the same opportunity to hold the country to ransom, but it's simply not the case. And it's only a limited number of people who are members of unions get to have that privilege. And that's not really in line with fairness, particularly when they have protected pensions and the vast majority of other people don't. Now, when we then think about the wider stock market, well, the FTSE 250 is primarily the UK market, and because the pound is starting to ease back again, then the FTSE 250 was in positive territory in here today. I posted the chart for Standard Chartered yesterday, and there is news today that it is potentially going to be the target for a takeover by the UAE. So the share was up in really dynamic form in here today and then pulled back from that area. But what it does help to highlight is that global investors are looking at China and looking at exposure to the Chinese market, and the H share index has followed through again on the upside. So now it is very clearly back above the 200-day moving average. And there is clear potential here that China is going to do what's necessary to support both the economy and the property market. And that will be beneficial for the wider economy and for the stock market overall. Then in India, there was clear relative strength in 2022. But now that in the emerging market sector, India has more competition, then the stock market in India hasn't been quite as impressive, but it is still holding the breakout and perhaps more likely to range over the course of the next few months. The Vietnamese market has put in a higher reaction low and it is following through on the upside. So this is certainly taking some enthusiasm from the recovery in Chinese assets. Then let's think about Mexico. Well, with the potential for nearshoring, with the potential for the domestic economy to thrive in an environment where they are now exporting gas to Europe, or at least building the facilities necessary to do it, and de trying to develop a domestic battery sector where they'll be manufacturing more vehicles to export into the US market. And that is, and then of course it's a country with a rather large population. So the Mixed Vol Index is bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average. And one of the defining characteristics of the peso has been how utterly boring it's been for 2 years. Despite the really significant moves we've had in the dollar, the Mexican peso has just been going steady. And steadying with a mild upward bias, which is certainly beneficial then for US dollar investors. So the iShares ETF is bouncing now from the region of the 200-day moving average and coming up into the upper side of what has been a 7-year range. So there's certainly potential for outperformance by emerging markets. And that is despite the fact that the dollar is starting to steady again, because growth will be found in emerging markets, whereas it is more likely than not that the USA is going to move progressively closer to a recession, and Europe is already in a recession. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.